Hey, welcome to the Killer Frogs. It's a podcast all about TCU athletics. We are live tonight from the poop deck. Thank you all for joining us. Really appreciate it. You can catch us live every Thursday from 6 to 7 here at the poop deck, just down the street from the lovely campus of TCU. And tonight's episode is 196. Joining me to my right is Nathan Hernandez. Nathan, how you doing?
I'm good. You know, I was going to give some bad news today, but I just want to go on record that I come up here with a lot of TCU Hall of Famers, right? We got WC coming. We got Shannon.
Yeah. You're building up to something.
Most TCU fans aren't going to know who I am, but my signatures are on three of the posters in this place, so
Okay. Well, there you go. There's claim to fame. We'll come back to your Nathan's Bad News Corner segment here in just a minute. But to get us started tonight, we've called up Barry Lewis from the Fan Nation to kind of give us an update of what's happening this week in TCU athletics. Barry, how are you doing tonight?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing great. So what is going on in TCU athletics?
There is a lot of things happening in a lot of sports beyond just football this week. Our rifle team they participated in their first tournament, came in first, beating Navy and VMI.
That's great.
Yeah, so think about that. Our all-women's squad beating co-ed of our future military.
I don't know what to think of that, but I like it.
Right, exactly. They are now ranked number two. Stephanie Allen on the team shot a perfect 600 in air rifle.
Wow.
It is the sixth TCU athlete to do that and the eighth occurrence for a TCU athlete.
That is no small feat.
And they sent, this past weekend, they sent four of the team to the first phase of the Olympic trials. So then in equestrian, we started the season hosting number one and defending national champ SMU.
And we won that match.
We won that.
Yeah.
And as a result, have now gone two straight weeks of sitting in the number one spot in equestrian.
Well deserved.
And swept all four of the Big 12 Rider of the Month honors for September.
Wow.
The soccer team is now undefeated in Big 12 play. They are 4-0-1. They're playing Kansas tonight. They're 8-3-2 overall. And after a few weeks of not being in the polls, they jumped back into the poll the same week Texas dropped out.
Well, it's about time, actually. I thought they were going to be back in the poll last week.
Right.
And it took them a little bit while. They had a little bit of a slow start, but they seem to be catching their stride.
Yep. So there are three teams from the Big 12 that are ranked in the soccer poll. Texas Tech and BYU are at number 7, and TCU's at number 23. The volleyball team has started conference play. They're hosting Cincinnati tonight and tomorrow night. They are 3-1 in conference play. Had a scare last weekend against Texas Tech on Friday night. Won the first two sets, lost the next two sets. It came down to that deciding fifth set.
It was a nail biter.
Yep, it was. The Big 12 is loaded this year. There are six ranked teams this week, and TCU is not there yet. So
they'll get there.
Yep.
They keep playing the way they're playing, they'll get there.
The swimming and diving team started their season last weekend at Florida State, and with that, they won four of this week's Big 12 honors, including the Big 12 Men's Swimmer of the Week, Women's Swimmer of the Week, Women's Diver of the Week, and Women's Newcomer of the Week. And then in the news from women's basketball, Sedona Prince, who's the transfer that we got from Oregon, who decided not to go into the WNBA and came here for her last year of eligibility. She was named to the Big 12, the preseason All Big 12 team as an honorable mention. She is only the fourth Frog to receive that honor and the first one since Lauren Hurd a couple years ago.
Yeah, she's going to be really exciting to watch this season.
Oh, she is.
Yeah, it's going to be that's going to be one of those kind of things that I think the fans are really going to get into the women's basketball team this year, because she really kind of draws people in. The style that she plays, I that's going to be great to watch.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fun for the sport and fun for the team. So
absolutely. So real quick, what about basketball? Football. What's your game of the week to watch?
The game of the week is simply, just because of the name of the game,
Okay.
It's the Baylor hosting Texas Tech.
Baylor, so, Texas Tech game.
So that would be BU and TT. So the butt bowl.
Okay, I see where you're going with this. The butt bowl in Waco.
The butt bowl in Waco. At the toilet bowl.
At the toilet bowl. There you go. Folks, the jokes write themselves at this point, you know.
Exactly.
The butt bowl in Waco, in the toilet bowl. I think that deserves a clap. Thank you.
So we did a preview of all of the Big 12 games, and I must say that this is some of my best writing to date, so I wanted to share what I had to say about the butt bowl.
All right.
After Farmageddon, the annual matchup between Kansas State and Iowa State, this game has my favorite name of any Big 12 game, the Butt Bowl. It's been a tough season so far in Lubbock and in Waco. You could say both teams have a crack in them. Early losses have brought discomfort at both schools. Fans of both have felt sick, almost constipated, and they're cheeky about it. Maybe they can get to the bottom of their woes soon. Both teams almost came away with early season wins from ranked opponents. They probably wish they could have changed a play or two here or there, but what you know what they say, hindsight is 20/20.
I can tell Barry gets paid by the pun, folks. He gets paid by the pun. Well done, Barry. Really appreciate it. Thank you very much for the update. Looking forward to hearing what you have next week. So this last week, if you remember, Shannon was gone because it was the Hall of Fame week at TCU, and we had a lot of inductees, and we wanted to bring back another former Hall of Famer to talk a little bit about the Hall of Fame, and then also kind of talk a little bit about that game against West Virginia. So welcome back to the podcast, everyone's favorite Hall of Fame offensive lineman, W.C. Nix. Dubber, how you doing?
Doing great.
Yeah. All right. Just getting close.
All right. You're doing great.
Yeah.
So glad to be here.
We're glad to have you back, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're looking good.
Yeah. Well, got him. Yeah.
Hair looks so great.
I haven't,
his hair
I
looks
haven't
amazing.
Seen a barber in a while.
I'm okay with that.
Maybe if I have a few weeks off from the podcast, I can grow some hair like that, too.
Yeah.
You got it.
Yeah.
It's going to be on your chin.
Yeah, it'll probably just be on my chin at that point, yeah. Or out of my ears, one of the two. Who knows? So, Dubber, you've been part of the Hall of Fame committee in the past, and we had some amazing inductees this week. And I know you've got some stories to kind of pass along to us. First off, how was the event last week for the Hall of Fame?
Oh, it was great. I mean, it was packed. I mean, I was surprised with how many people were there, and so it was a big class actually, and it was a very unique class. It's probably the most unique class since I've been going, as far as inductees and stuff like that.
Well, not only we have individual inductees, but you also inducted an entire team.
Yes, the 1983 women's golf won the national championship, and they were the first women's sport to win a national championship.
Yeah, and that's well-deserved. I think a lot of people at the game were kind of scratching their heads a little bit because they took a while to kind of get through all of the inductees during that break.
Yes.
And a lot of people were wondering why the entire women's golf team was up there. But it is such an amazing accolade and really an amazing season they actually had.
Yeah, yeah, it was unbelievable, you know, and there was five of them that weren't supposed to do it. And, you know, I mean, that's what's great about it. I mean, there's a lot of underdog stories in the Hall of Fame this year.
That seems to be the running theme, right? You have a lot of people that by all accounts, they came to TCU not necessarily to do what they ended up doing and getting in the Hall of Fame. Like you mentioned the equestrian team.
The equestrian team, I mean, you know, here I've been to TCU, I think I know a lot about it, and I find out the equestrian team, you know, the girl that they inducted, and I'm terrible with names, so I'm not going to try it. So she actually came to TCU just to go to school. And while she was at school, they started the equestrian team. And they actually picked up some other girls that she knew that and had rode also when in high school when they were equestrian. So they made themselves a little equestrian team. Second year, they won the national championship. That is unbelievable.
That's insane.
Win a national championship in your second year of starting a program. And so, yeah, so it was pretty interesting that, you know, that she did it. And then, of course, you go to rifle and you talk about the perfect score. The first girl that got inducted, she was at the time, she was one of four to shoot a perfect 600. And she did it at TCU, and she actually went to the Olympics in 2012 and 2016. So, you know, I mean, it was just a lot of stories like that, you know. And Tank Carter, you know, you think about Tank Carter, and you think, well, you know, he's heavily recruited. You know, Tank got up there, and he talked about, well, Gary Patterson, the only person that offered me D1 was Gary Patterson. And, you know, then he, you know, so as soon as he offered, I jumped on it, you know, and then Tank Carter ended up being a pretty good football player for
Just a bit. Tank, yeah. Tank certainly has cemented his place in TCU history.
Yeah.
But it was really a fantastic Hall of Fame class.
Yeah,
really this time
was.
Around. And I was really impressed by a lot of the stories, but just overall the character of this particular class, which again just kind of goes to show the type of individuals that come to TCU to play athletics.
Yeah. No doubt. I mean, yeah, and then you had, you know, Matt Perk and I can't remember the track. There's a track female that got in, and she, you know, they won everything. I mean, you know, so they, you understand why they're in. I mean, you know, you kind of saw their path going that way. But, you know, there's just a lot of diversity in there, and a lot of, you don't realize the secondary sports, I mean, how well we do at that. And especially right now, I mean, that's what I tell everybody when I go talk about TCU out there. I mean, I do talk football. I mean, you know, there's no doubt. But I go ahead and I start, it's like last year was a dream year. I mean, with what football did, with what baseball did, with what soccer did, volleyball, soccer, beach volleyball. I mean, you know, just everything. I mean, you know. I mean, sheesh, if you can't be fired up to be a Horned Frog after last year, I'm
with you. I mean, if you can't come back and say, man, what a fantastic year that was.
Yes.
I mean, that was something special. And it was. And this Hall of Fame kind of reflects a lot of that. And it was interesting because we only had one football player inducted this time around. We had two baseball players, Perk and Scott Atchison. You know, like you said, equestrian, rifle, soccer, track, men's soccer player actually got inducted in the Hall of Fame.
Yes, he did. Yes. And his dad actually had been inducted to the Hall of Fame as a football player.
Yeah.
And so it was an interesting class. I didn't even know we had men's soccer.
Well, we don't anymore.
I know.
Well,
I think it was right before my time. And so,
yep.
So, you know, so anyway, it was a really great class. I mean, it really was. But I can't even believe I would even think about missing Chris Hall.
Yes.
He was a special contributor. But Chris Hall, I mean, he was there when I was there. I mean, he's the salt of the earth. I mean, there wouldn't be anybody more deserving than Chris as far as that.
Well, talk a little bit about Chris, because not a lot of Horned Frog fans actually know Chris. So, first off, special contributor.
Yes.
Explain that designation.
Well, it's a go-in, whatever you did for TCU, it maybe not have been in the sport, I mean, actual playing, but they decided, you know, there's been people that have, you know, kind of bled, sweat, tears with TCU, and, you know, so they wanted to, you know, to start, you know, every year, you know, putting somebody in like that. And, you know, Chris Hall, you know, I mean, he started out as a trainer there all those years, and I mean, and he still does stuff for TCU. I only know everything he does. He seems like he's at everything. I mean, anytime and playing football on the line, I've had a few surgeries. So that's my go-to. He calls, I call him up, he tells me who to go to, what to do, and he still does it today. But he just touched so many people's lives. I mean, all those athletes through the year. I mean, and he was really basketball. But, you know, I mean.
Well, but he, like you said, I think the reason why he got into the Hall of Fame is just he just gave more of himself to not just basketball.
No,
it was about the entire department.
Yeah, about everything. And then not only that, when he got out, I mean, he's still such a strong component to me of TCU and stuff like that, and the ties and stuff like that. So of everybody that got in, I was probably more excited about that one just because I know him and I know what kind of person he is and stuff like that. Of course, his wife still made it in before he did. I told you that. Becky did.
That's okay. Shannon's wife made it in before him, too.
Well, she deserved to.
Oh, absolutely. Jury's still out on Shannon. Anyway, moving on. Thank you very much, WC, for that update on the Hall of Fame. We're going to ask you to stick around, too, because we want to hear your thoughts about the West Virginia game. But real quick, Nathan, should we go to your corner of doom and gloom this week? You have any other bad news you want to give us?
Well, I didn't up until the TV was just playing like 5 minutes ago. Apparently, Dick Butkus died today. And sad day for people that appreciate hard-nosed football. Yeah.
That is sad.
Moment of silence
for, yeah.
All right, that's all I got.
Well, thank you, Nathan. Appreciate that. All right. Moving on, TCU took on West Virginia last week and unfortunately dropped a three-point loss to the Mountaineers at home here in Fort Worth. And it was a game that was, a little bit baffling and quite frustrating for TCU fans, including a third quarter that only saw one total yard of offense by the vaunted Horned Frog offense. Unfortunately, it's not looking good. So to start with this, WC, the offensive line, I'm glad you're here this week because the offensive line seemed to digress a little bit in this game. And I know there were a few new players, new faces on that line this last week. What have you seen this year, and what did you see out of that line last week?
Well, last week, I mean, you're right. Second half, I mean, they decided real quick that they were not going to just sit back. I mean, we made number one. I don't even know what his name is, but linebacker. We made him all world. And, I mean, every play, I mean, they were coming. I mean, they brought a – it wasn't all the offensive line, but it definitely some of the offensive line. They decided that they were going to – I mean, they run blitz. I mean, everybody thinks about the blitz just being on passing down, but really and truly, they were run blitzing as much as they were pass blitzing. I mean, they were bringing the house, and we did not do a very good job of picking it up. Whether it was linemen, whether it was running backs, whoever it was, and of course, now, you know, what our best lineman, Coleman, he was out last week. He didn't even play, so, you know, I knew they had a freshman in there for him, and you know, they were moving the line around some, but, you know, that is just a total team effort. I mean, okay, let me rephrase that. That was a total offensive effort because the defense wasn't terrible. I mean, I thought the defense, but the offense, they just went south in that third quarter. And
it's almost like they didn't ever really come out of halftime.
Yeah. I think they just got – I mean, it looked like West Virginia wanted it more. I think West Virginia really shocked them. I think they – they brought every play, they brought seven or eight guys. I mean, they loaded up and just, they brought them, you know. Because I felt like there were several times that we had people open down the field, and either he couldn't get the pass off or he was already in his mind thinking, I got to get out of here. I got to go. You know, I got to run.
Yeah, he was already out of the pocket. Yeah. He was already running for his life at that point.
He didn't stay in the pocket like he should have sometimes. And then sometimes he got flushed out because he had to. And, you know, you sit there and watch somebody running down the field doing this, you know, and, you know, he couldn't see him. I mean, I thought they changed their whole strategy at halftime. I thought West Virginia did. We did not handle it whatsoever. I mean, from here on out, that's what I'd do to our offense. I'd load it up and say, we're going to come get you. But the only way you're going to get them out of doing something like that is if you hit. You got to hit the big play. You got to make them pay for blitzing and stuff. And we never made them pay, especially the whole third quarter.
Well, the big play, Nathan, has always, well, at least this season, seems to be the weakest part of this offense. Like we can't hit a deep pass, and that seems to be something that the team's starting to pick up.
Yeah, Chandler was not great in the deep ball this past week. He overthrew several players that if he even just puts it in the area, like on the one, I don't remember who it was to, but everyone wanted pass interference on it. It was just overthrown. Like, it was what it was. It wasn't like the Houston game where they called that one. The refs are not going to call stuff in our favor. He just wasn't throwing that well this – honestly, last week either on the deep ball, SMU, he had a couple, three or four balls that were deep balls that he just blatantly overthrew and almost got picked off. I don't know what's going on with that. Bailey was like really close to breaking
several
runs this week, but just West Virginia's tackle is just able to get him by the shoestrings or whatever it was, or coming off blocks well and wrapping up, closing up the hole that was there.
Even that one, that screen pass out, that tackle that was made in space.
Yeah.
If he doesn't make that tackle, that's a touchdown. And that ended up costing us
We went forward on fourth down and we didn't get it. But that's my other issue is we just got hit in the mouth. Like, you have a fourth and half a yard and you can't pick that up. Like, you're not going to win a lot of football games this year if you can't get that.
Yeah, I was disappointed to see. And, as an offensive lineman, WC, when you have that fourth and a half a yard, as an offensive lineman, you want to have the quarterback line up underneath center and just push.
Oh, I think there are two now because you can see how everybody's doing it now. I mean, you take the
push.
The quarterback, you get underneath, right, and you turn around and push them.
Right, but we kept lining up in the shotgun.
I know. I mean, well, I'm not calling plays, so. That's just my opinion.
I don't think that's the biggest issue. I think the biggest issue is just their D-line pushed our O-line around the whole game.
Well, I agree with that, too. But still, there's certain plays you can run in certain situations. And, we've done that more than once. I mean, we had a third one a couple of weeks ago, and we were running the ball well, and all of a sudden you look up and we didn't have a running back in the backfield. And so we're not going to hand it off to a running back for sure because he's not there. And so, we end up, not converting. And then we missed the field goal. And I was like, I don't understand why we quit running there. I mean, we were running good. We were chucking yards. And all of a sudden, we just kind of got cute. And then cute got us, But I will say this. We battle. I mean, we've lost two games by a total of 6 points. I mean, it's not – I mean, I just think they outplayed us up front. I mean, I think they out-schemed us too some. I mean, I really do. I feel like at halftime, especially offensively, our offensive team, their defense came out and did some blitz package stuff that we were not even close prepared for.
So would you say then that our second half adjustments this year seem to be lacking?
I don't know. We had our best third quarter we've had all season. And then this week we had our worst third quarter. So I don't know if it's a locker room thing or if it's coming out dead.
Well, I will say this too. We had a lot of people drafted last year.
Yes.
And we just assume that kids are going to jump right back in there and be as good as they were. Well, there's chemistry, there's leadership. There's other factors in there besides just playing. And really, one of my biggest things this season is I worry about is leadership because, the thing about last year was Max, you just knew that even if you wasn't playing good or playing bad, I mean, it didn't matter. If something bad happened or they needed a first down or we had to do something, you knew. I mean, the whole team believed he was going to do it. So when he came in, he had everybody believing they're going to. We don't, and I'm not taking anything from Chandler because I've always said Max Duggan's one of the best leaders I've ever seen out on the field. And so trying to come in behind him, it's kind of difficult to be the leader anyway, but we don't have that leader yet. And, I'll say this. I'm an offensive lineman. I think I was a great leader when I played. But you got to have the quarterback. I'm looking at the old quarterback sitting over there and saying, you got to have the quarterback or running back. I mean, one of those skill positions, that stud that's leading your team, he's got to be the leader. I mean, you got to
have. Well, even if he knew he wasn't going to get it, he was still going to fight for it. That's all Max did all year was fight for it, and he got it a lot of the time. Unfortunately, the one time we're talking about going on fourth and short and running the quarterback under the center, we didn't do it in the K-State game.
K-State. Yeah, title.
But you knew Max was going to fight for it, and that's what WC's talking about is where people see that, and they're, I want to fight too, and so it just pulls everybody else along, and we just haven't had that person. Even our I'm not ragging on our defense right now because I thought they played really well, but we just haven't had that kind of a leader on any part of the team.
Well, I agree with that too. Same thing on defense side of the ball. You had, D. Winters was a four-year starter. Tomlinson, was he a four-year starter? I mean, those guys were your natural leaders. And so they led the whole way for 4 years almost, and then they left. And
it leaves a void.
It left a void a little, and every once in a while that happens. And I think right. you had such great leadership from them certain few guys that when they left this year, now you're trying to find who the leaders are out there now, you know.
Well, I would have to say, though, I mean, you started off, Dubber, talking about, you know, the defense seemed to be doing better this game, and I agree. I would say, though, I think the defense is starting to see some of that leadership come into play because they're starting to communicate better. You've got people flying around telling everybody where their position needs to be. There doesn't seem to be as much confusion in the defense in the last 2 weeks as there was in the first couple of games of this season. And it showed. I mean, you have a team like West Virginia, especially we thought we were going to see their redshirt freshman quarterback this last week, and unfortunately we didn't get him. But when you get a team like West Virginia and you hold them to essentially 24 points after being, you know, basically with bad field position almost the entire game and a fourth down stand at the goal line, I don't know how much more you want out of your defense than that.
Oh, I agree. I mean, the defense, I mean – they didn't lose the game for us at all. I mean, they kept us in the game, really. They really kept us in the game. And, you know, it was such a weird game anyway because there was two big injuries, you know, that stopped the game. And I'm glad they're healthy. But, I mean, that just killed momentum twice. We're going in, you know, we're driving, we're having good things. And then when that happens, you know, that just zaps that momentum right out of you. So it just seemed like every time we were close to getting over the top, it just – whether it be an injury or crazy penalty or, you know, I mean, I thought there was two or three penalties that were just crazy this week. I mean, but
I'm sure Nathan will have a few things to say about that later.
I'd rather not. The refs are terrible. We're going to go back to talk about the Frogs, but I don't understand how the Big 12 can take pride in those refs. Like, they are so – like, they can't even get the same – like, call the same penalty the right way. Like, with our late hit out of bounds where they hit our player, not a single flag in sight. And then our O-lineman, it was on the punt, they're going out of bounds as he hits. I mean, it was a late hit. They should have called it, and they did. But how do you not call that both ways? And I don't understand. And then we had two defensive holding calls, which one of them was. On the nose tackle. One of them was holding.
One of them was. Second one, made the tackle. Come on. That wasn't holding. I don't care what they say.
No, not at all.
My other biggest thing on the refs was, okay, so we had two punts, right, or two muffed punts, and we start returning it, and then they rule it back at wherever it got touched originally. Why are you letting our players still run down the field and get hit if you're going to call the play dead back, blow the whistle, like call the play dead, because now our players are just taking shots, like someone's gonna get hurt. And unfortunately, luckily for us, it wasn't on our team, but they had two bad penalties or bad injuries, but on one of those, so it's like you could have
thankfully he seems to be doing better. But you're right. I mean, it was very odd, and it seemed like there was, you know, I talked about that there wasn't a whole lot of confusion on our defensive side, but there certainly seemed to be a lot of confusion with the referees on that game, and that was just very interesting. But you're right. I mean, the spots were bad. We've seen this from Big 12 reps going back, you know, a couple of seasons now, and it's something that I think Sonny is starting to address. He's talked about it in his, you know, press conferences, both post-game and during the week.
And at the refs in their face.
And of course, yeah, one of those penalties was
on
by
him.
Coach Dykes. During, if you weren't there on Saturday and you were just watching at home, you missed probably one of the best chewing outs I've ever seen head coach give a ref in my entire life.
Well,
I play for Coach P, so I've seen him yell it. I've seen him kick refs out of scrimmages.
He's a professional chewer outer, yeah, for sure. And even that, I think Sonny rose to that level.
Sonny was very entertaining. I mean, I couldn't help but not watch him because every timeout, every whatever, every second he got after he got agitated,
this is all you see.
He never let up. I loved it. I mean, you know, he had every right to. You know, that's kind of like the letter of the law is correct. I mean, when they ran the wrong route and Chandler threw it over and they called
intentional grounding.
There was no duress. There was nothing. You could tell that it was a wrong route run or they got mixed up. And for them to call that, I mean, I just hadn't seen that called like that.
I mean, watched a lot of football in my life and played a lot of football. I've seen that called three times. One was Chandler. Another time was literally the next day. They called in the NFL, actually.
Yeah, it was the Philadelphia game,
yeah,
right?
They yeah, called, they happened to call it that week. And then one was like 5 years ago. Like, I've seen that called three times. It unfortunately happened when he had someone that got through the O-line, and so he had pressure on him. If there was no pressure, they wouldn't have called it. But it was because there was pressure.
Yeah, I guess it's the definition of what is pressure in that particular
case. Because I didn't feel like there was any pressure.
I didn't think so either.
I didn't really think there was
pressure. I mean, he had an established pocket. It wasn't like he was in any danger of actually being sacked. So, yeah, you know, again, it's, yeah, it's interpretation, but it's unfortunate. However,
that didn't lose the game for us, though. I'm going to tell you that
right
now.
It didn't lose the game, but it certainly messed up a field goal attempt.
We could have did a few things, you know. And I think, you know, maybe, you know, I felt like we were getting better, going in the right direction. I felt like our offense was getting better. You know, it's not like we don't put up numbers. I mean, but you know, there's a big difference between numbers and scoring touchdowns, you know.
Well, and it's interesting you brought that up. I want to point this out. Here are the points we have scored per game in order: 42, 41, 36, 34, 21.
Going backwards.
We are going backwards.
Yeah.
And that's last week we didn't score a single point in the entire second half.
Oh, I know.
And that's
I was there. I promise you, I was there. I was watching.
I mean, that's something's got to change there, and it's against West Virginia. I can understand if this was, you know, Texas or an OU, but it was against West Virginia.
And really, two-thirds of our special teams weren't great last week either. I mean, you had two block field goals.
Missed one, two blocked.
I mean, so, you know, I mean, that just, you know, if you win two of the three, you probably win the football game.
Because you lost two of the three areas,
you lost the football game. And, you know, I'm not sure, and I know Sonny came back and said that he wished he'd went for it now at the end. I wish he would have too. I had no faith. I mean, he already had one blocked, and I wish he'd, and he's a great kicker and everything, but in that situation, I think I would have went for it, you know.
Well, and they were ready for it. I mean, when you're talking about a 50-plus yard field goal in every attempt, you know his trajectory is going to be a lot lower. And they, to their credit, they got that guy up there, and he was able to actually get a hand on that ball cleanly.
You know, I listened to Coker, big offensive lineman, plays offensive tackle. He was one of the interviews after the game. And, you know, he made a great point, and I thought, you know, it's so true. He said 2 years ago, you know, we – 2 years ago, he said, with Patterson's last year, we lost a lot of one-score games. Last year, we won a lot of one-score games. He goes, we got to learn how to turn it around because – we're going to be in a lot of one-score games, and if we don't turn it around, it's going to go south pretty quick. He said, I don't know what the fix is, but he said, you know, and it's exactly right. I mean, we're pretty much, you know, college football is getting pretty even.
Yeah.
And so
there is parity there.
Yeah, the parity. So every week you better be ready to play, you know, and, you know, and you better learn how to win them one-score games or, you know, a 10-point game, because if you don't, that you're going to start losing a bunch of games by 3, 7 points, stuff like that.
Yeah, TCU really loves the win-by-one philosophy, and I hate it.
I think we all do.
Well, I don't think Sonny's like that, though. I mean,
it,
you
he's
know,
not.
He wants
He'll
to score as many points as he can. We just couldn't score points last week.
No, it was unfortunate. But there you have it. 3-point loss to West Virginia. Of course, we're going to turn it around against Iowa State in an away game, another night game this week. And we'll get to that in just a minute. But there are a few other games coming up this week that we kind of wanted to highlight. First one is Alabama against Texas A&M. Dubber, how do you feel about Texas A&M's chances against number 10 Alabama?
Well,
it's at A&M.
I'm not an Aggie fan.
You got
so
the 12th man and everything.
Right now, so. You know, but, you know, I think it'll probably be a pretty entertaining game. I don't think Alabama's near as strong as what they have been.
I agree, yeah.
And so, you know, it only takes a couple of mistakes this year, a couple of mistakes here and there, and all of a sudden you're going to lose a football game. I mean, I think there's, you know, I think in all of college football, there you could maybe name 3 or 4 teams that you think, well, they got a chance to be great. I mean, you're better than – but, boy, I'm not even sure there's 3 or 4. I think anybody can be beat at any time this year. You know, so, I mean, it ought to be a good game. I mean, I'll probably be pulling for Alabama. I know everybody hate me for that.
I was about to ask you, are you pulling for A&M or Bama? But no, I didn't answer that question.
I'll go to my grave. I'll never pull for A&M.
Nope. I hope Alabama wins by like 25.
Yeah, just blows
points.
Them out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
If although, they lose by 1 or 100, I'm happy. It don't matter. Just so there's an L after their.
Well, one of my favorite things leading up to this game on Twitter, somebody had posted a fake, you know, they have those like uniform drops that the teams actually do to show all the kind of neat uniforms. This one, it was like farmer overalls. That was what the uniform looked like. Like a print on the uniform. Not that they were actually wearing overalls, but that the uniform looked like that. I thought that was pretty good. Caught a lot of people, and a lot of people thought that was a real uniform. So good on Twitter. We also have Georgia versus Kentucky. And Kentucky, Nathan, doing fairly well this season. What do you think Kentucky's chances there against the Bulldogs?
I think they'll keep it close for a half. And then a lot of the top 10 teams seem to kind of keep things close in the first half of their games, and then second half kind of run away with them. And that's honestly what's keeping them in the top 10. That's what's separating them from the pack, is they're playing full four quarters, or mostly full four quarters. I think Kentucky can keep it close. I almost went to Kentucky, so I hope Kentucky wins that game.
I hope so,
but
too.
But I don't see them.
If Kentucky can run on them, you know, they have such a great running game, but it'll depend. They're going against Georgia, but I don't think Georgia's as good.
They got to cover the tight end.
Last year.
No, I think Georgia last year was amazing, and I think Georgia this year has definitely taken a step back.
They just have that tight end. That tight end's ridiculous.
Well, yeah. Oh, God.
Brock Bowers.
Just amazing. Yeah. And then we come to the Red River Shootout, OU versus Texas. Are we – Dubber, again.
Don't care.
Pick or poison.
If they tied, that would make it better for me. Somehow they ended up tying and nobody got the win. I mean, that would be –
If they tied, they'd both move up.
I mean, yeah.
Are you hoping for an asteroid impact? Is that what you're hoping for at this
point? Well, it doesn't matter to me. I mean, I hope they beat each other to death. Yeah. I mean, you know.
Nathan, how about you? What do you think?
You know, you don't wish for injury upon people. I don't want anybody to get hurt. But if they could somehow, like, kind of bruise each other a little bit so they're not fully healthy when they come here – or when Texas comes here and we go to OU, that would be great. If there was just a way for both of them to lose, I would be very happy. I think this is the first year, though, I'm going for OU. I just don't want Texas to continue their path right now.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same mindset. I'd like to see OU win. And I'm not saying that because I was born in Oklahoma. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah.
TCU plays Iowa State, 7 o'clock game, Jack Thrice Stadium in Iowa. So, Dubber, we are a 6.5-point favorite going into this game. Iowa State came off of a loss to OU last week, 50-20. And on paper, it looks like the Frogs should technically be a much bigger favorite than 6.5 points. We've got a 100-plus yard average running back per game. They're averaging 28 yards on the ground. Chandler Morris is close to 300 yards a game. Their quarterback's closer to 200 yards a game. And, you know, on paper, it looks like the Frogs should run away with this game. So how are you feeling about this matchup?
I feel good about it. I really do. I think the reason why we're not a bigger point favorite is because we're just not very consistent. Maybe from quarter to quarter, half to half, to, you know, in a game. And so, you know, I think they're pretty good. I think they're pretty good after a loss. They were last time, so I'm gonna hope that they're gonna put it back together again, and hopefully they figure out the blitz pickup, because that's how I think people start playing us. I think they'll start bringing the house until we decide we could stop that. But I mean, I feel good about it. A lot of it has to do with Iowa State's terrible at the scoring department. So. If we give up 24 points, we might be in trouble. You know, I don't know. You know, but I feel good about it. I really do. I think we'll bounce back. I think we have enough talent. And talent's not the problem here. I mean, I'll say that. I went out and I've seen them practice, and I've seen that, man, they got some talented kids. But you got to put it all together. I mean, it doesn't matter how much, you know, you always hear talent potential get you beat, you know. And so until they put it all together, but I feel like we'll bounce back.
Nathan, how about you? I mean, you mentioned top 10 teams are putting four straight quarters together. Do you think TCU has it in them this week?
After hopefully Coach Dykes took his frustration from the ref to them a little bit and got on them for the performance that they did in the second half of this last game. So I'm hoping they can put it together four quarters. The only thing that's I have yet to see is just we've only had one road game. So I'm interested to see how we play in this one. Ames is a very hard place to play. Anybody that's played there will know that. It's almost as bad as Kansas, because Kansas for a long time was hard to play in because there was just nobody in the stands.
So you've been up in Ames before. What makes playing in Jack Thrice Stadium so difficult?
Well, the weather usually sucks. Their crowd is actually pretty good. I'm not gonna lie. I thought it was. It's just one of those places where you're there for football, and they're fired up. They feed off their home crowd a lot. For some reason, up when we have games up there, it's usually pretty close, or at least I feel like it is. I just think that the key to this game is gonna be running the football. If we can establish a run game, because I do think it's going to be a defensive battle just because of where we're playing and how we've been playing. I think as long as we can establish a run game, I think we'll be all right.
Well, the good thing is it's not going to be real cold, I don't think. So, no. You know, I mean, just the weather shouldn't be that if you just talked in later on in the year, you know, that's a bit different story. But
playing up there in November was totally different than the beginning of October.
And I promise you, I guarantee you Sonny got in their grill. Because, I mean, after the press conference, the other thing he said, this is the worst offensive second half offensive performance I've ever had. He made no bones about how he felt about it. So, you know, I think you'll have him ready to play, you know.
Well, on a comment like that, do you think he was directing that more towards Briles, or do you think he was directing that more towards the players?
Oh, I think it was directed toward everybody.
All right.
I mean, I don't think anybody was innocent in that deal. I mean, I think Briles needs to look at some of the plays he called. I mean, you know, and some of the situations he put the offense in, and then from the quarterback all the way down to the line. I mean, there were some bright spots, especially in the first half. There were some bright spots in the fourth quarter. We just couldn't ever really get over the hump.
Finish it.
Well, it goes back to the first week where our defense got called out for the performance they put on, and to their credit, that was two players that could have easily won the Heisman this year. And so, up until aside from that game, our defense has played great, or at least in my opinion, not fantastic, but they've held their own, bend don't break, and in the last few games have really played well. And I think that they bounced back from being called out like that. So I'm hoping our offense can do the same thing.
Yeah, I know if Shannon was here, he would have something to say about the 3-3-5 right now, because he's not a believer. And I know a lot of the guys who have played defense at TCU have kind of said the same thing. They haven't quite bought into the 3-3-5 yet, but I'm starting to understand a little bit more about, you know, how Gillespie's actually putting this thing together. And I agree with you. I think it's that bend don't break mentality, and I think a lot of defensive guys who've played at TCU just want lights out. They want to see a goose egg on the board.
But I will say something. He's learned a little bit. It's not totally 3-3-5. You look at what he's been doing lately. There's been four rushers, five rushers. I mean, I can't stand it when it's a true 3-3-5. Our worst down on defense is third and 10 and more. I just, third and one, we can stop that. We can stop fourth and one. Third and 10 to 15, I'm ready to give them the first down. Don't even run the play, because they're going to make play, because we get back that 3-3-5, and all of a sudden, you know, we don't get a rush, and they pick us apart. But here of late, he is I'm not saying that he's not playing 3-3-5, because the run defense has been awesome in that. But the passing game, he's definitely started bringing more people. He's not just bringing three all the time.
I think our secondary is playing better, better than they did in that first game. So I think, because if you start bringing pressure, now you're leaving somebody one-on-one somewhere, or you're having to cover for somebody else that's leaving. And so I think our secondary has been playing a lot better in terms of that.
Yeah, and I think we'll see that continue with this game, because Iowa State's passing game is obviously not their strength. And you know, like you said, Dubber, they're not really good at scoring points. On both sides, you know, whether it's running or whether it's passing, they've got a lot of deficiencies. And I think you're right. Talent's not the issue here. I think, you know, leaving those guys on the island, Nathan, in this game, doesn't bother me as much as it
used to, because they used to have a lot of good tight ends, and so they always had a bigger body than we did, than our corners. But I think we're
and they've got a decent tight end now. But I think I agree with you, Deborah. I think this 3-3-5 is starting to become kind of this weird hybrid, you know, like a 3.5, 2.5 5 kind of a defense, if you want to label it that way. And I think we're starting to see that he is tailoring the defense to go after whatever the strength is of the offense, and just trust his guys to be able to pick up the slack. And I think they're starting to get it. I think it's starting to gel.
Well, I mean, look at Iowa State. You know, you talk about how good they were. It's kind of funny, you know, Brock Purdy gets drafted the last deal, and he was pretty dang good. He showed that he was a lot better than what everybody thought he was. And when he was there, that offense was rolling. And then, of course, once he left the draft, you know, the last 2 years, I mean, their offense has been terrible. I mean, and, you know, you get, hey, players make plays. I mean, you know, you know, they haven't found another Brock Purdy, you know, and so it happens to everybody, you know.
Beck is certainly not a Purdy. No, not at all.
Except Purdy's one bad play was against us. That one where Chandler almost did it this last week, where he was getting tackled and threw it up in the air.
How did he get that pass off?
We picked six that one, though.
Did pick six that one. I don't know if – you know what it reminded me of? You remember the old Stretch Armstrong?
Yeah.
Dumber? That's what Morris looked like on that play. I have no idea how he either, A, didn't break a leg or get down on that play and was still able to get that pass off. Ill-advised, but he still got it.
He's a great pressure thrower. He throws well under pressure in awkward situations. It's just standing in the pocket, like WC said. There's some times where he's got to stay in there and deliver. You're going to get hit. If they bring an all-out blitz, someone's unaccounted for. You're going to get hit. You just got to –
But, hey, make no bones about him. I mean, if you watch him throw a football, he throws for different slots. Yeah. He doesn't just throw up here. He can throw sidearm. He can throw – up top, three quarter. So I mean, I've seen him make
some great throws.
I understand. You know, I mean, after Max got going last year, you sit there and you go, how are they starting him in front of Max? Pure passer?
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's a better pure passer than Max was. I think that's how he beat him out. You know, I mean, and so he's got talent. I mean, there is no doubt about that. His deal just getting more and more confidence. He has a lot of confidence, and he lost a little bit, and he'll have to get it back. But that's, you know, he's young. I mean, everybody's growing up. You know, we're seeing a lot of players have to grow up that, you know, last year we had a bunch graduate that were grown men playing football. And then now we're having to fill in with some younger guys, and they're just having to learn how to play.
Yeah, I think the confidence thing is a good point. And one of the things that, you know, we've been arguing about up in the press box is just having Morris trust his receivers. Put it up there, let the receiver go up there and fight for the ball. He hasn't quite gotten to that point yet. There were a couple of passes last week, though, where he finally started to do that with, like, JP. But, you know, I think this game may be the opportunity for him to actually kind of gain some of that confidence in his wide receiver. But, you know, we'll see how it comes down. It looks, again, on paper, it looks like TCU should win this game and win it big. But let's talk about predictions, because, you know, the last couple of weeks it's been all over the map. And, Nathan, you've gotten close in the last few weeks. This last week was a little
– I was on track.
You were on track, and then the second half happened. Yeah. So what do you think?
I do think it's going to be a defensive battle. I think we will score a couple at the end. Keeping it under what WC said, if we give up 24, then we're going to lose. But I'm going to go 28-17 TCU.
28-17. Okay, that's good. So it's still a little bit of a wider margin of victory than you gave us last week.
And I was right.
Yeah. So that was – yeah, that's true. Dubber, what do you think?
Oh, I think we're going to play better. I'm going to go I think I'm going to go 35-14.
I'd like that. That would be really good.
I think we got our offenses. I mean, they played bad in the third quarter, but besides that third quarter, we put some numbers up. We got to finish. But
yeah, I mean, we had 320 yards in the first half, and then you're going to have 100 in the second half.
Well, it was that second half that kind of did us in. It was unfortunate. Dubber, I was thinking almost the same thing. I was thinking 35, but I'm going to trump you on that. I'm going to say 38, 28-21, TCU wins this game. So with that, you know, thank you, WC, for joining us tonight. Really appreciate you having you back.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. I enjoyed it.
Got to have you back in the future.
He brought a big crowd with him.
WC fan club, ladies and gentlemen. Well, I thank everybody who's come out here tonight to go ahead and listen to us here on the podcast. And, of course, thank everybody who's listening to us on all the major podcast platforms. You can find us at Apple Music and Stitcher and Google Play, even on Amazon Podcasts nowadays. And, of course, you can go to killerfrogs.com. You can read all about TCU athletics in the Fan Zone. Or, you know what, sign up for a free account in the form. Tell us what you think the prediction is going to be this week against Iowa State. And with that, we've come to the end of the podcast. It's a time where we get all of our frogs up. And we get to say,
Go Frogs!
Cycle of times.